This KABU program is Bruce and a grant from Teamsters Local 206, helping Oregon's working families fight for good jobs and a better future. For information about how the Teamsters can help you win respect at work, the number is 503-251-2344. And also by Ask Me Local 88, protecting worker rights and fighting to improve the wages and working conditions of members who work for Multnomah County, Central City Concern, Transition Projects, and American Friends Service Committee. More information at 503-239-9858 or www.local88.ws.
Welcome to Labor Radio, the only program of its kind in Oregon and Southwest Washington. I'm your host, Bill Zimmerman, Teamsters Local 206. There is much talk today about illegal immigration, and the solutions offered in most discussions are about as far apart as it gets. Should we build a fence? Should we not build a fence? Are illegal immigrants exploited workers or felons? Are illegal immigrants simply filling jobs American workers don't want? Or is their willingness to accept the lowest of wages and working conditions negatively impacting American workers? President Bush believes the USA can curb illegal immigration by inviting in legal guest workers to fill jobs that Americans supposedly don't want. This is not the first time the U.S. has been down this road, and history shows that even a generous temporary worker plan does not slow illegal immigration and is not temporary. From 1942 till 1964, the U.S. allowed in 4.6 million agricultural workers to replace farmhands that had gone off to support the war effort. Many of these guest workers stayed, and during the same period there were more than 5 million illegal alien apprehensions. Theodore Hessbrow, chairman of the 1978 Select Commission on Immigration and Refugee Policy, testified in Capitol Hill in 1981 that when he first joined the commission, he very much embraced a guest worker program. But in the end, after much study, stated it would be a mistake. Later, a Democratic Congresswoman, Barbara Jordan of Texas, agreed. Her group, which studied immigration for 6 years, rejected large-scale, low-skilled guest worker programs. Her panel found such programs depress wages, can lead to worker abuse, and present large social costs. Many questions remain unanswered with regard to the guest worker program. Questions like, will minimum wage laws be applied? What about Davis-Bacon Act and other labor laws? Will workers be free to unionize and to demand improvement in wages and conditions? And what about health care services and costs? And who will determine what jobs Americans don't want and why? Is a guest worker program the answer to illegal immigration or a fast track in the race to the bottom? Later on tonight's program, we'll be talking to Providence health care workers and volunteers from the Oregon Bus Project. But first on Labor Radio is Tom Chamberlain, president of the Oregon State AFL-CIO. Tom, welcome back to Labor Radio.
Good evening, Bill. How are you?
I'm just fine. So, guest worker program, why don't you describe for us briefly what a guest worker program is?
Well, guest worker program, as I know it, is a program where workers would come from a different country in the United States to work at a certain occupation, but there'd be no path to citizenship. We have guest workers now that come in from Korea, all over the world, to do various jobs in this country. There's a number of problems with that. First of all, it's not police. There's not a tracking system to it, and I know in the building trades they can cite many many times where this has been manipulated and used to the benefit of the employer, who can bring in cheaper workers from out of the country. A guest worker program in the city of Portland, for example, could be the Benson Tower, where they brought in Canadian construction workers to displace American workers to build that tower. They have guest worker programs in other countries, such as France and Germany, where they've basically created an underclass where these folks are not citizens. And if you've been following what's gone or what's been happening in Europe, you'll see that there's been strife and there's been demonstrations because these folks live in poverty. It's indentured servitude is basically what it is, because these folks are tied to their employer.
Right. So
they lose their job, they go back to their country of origin.
Right. And so there's some real track record on what the guest worker program is, how it's applied to a country, and the impact on its workers.
Right. A guest worker program to do one thing and one thing only. It is to give corporations a supply of cheap labor and to displace American workers.
So do you think this is the answer to illegal immigration, a guest worker program?
Absolutely not. I mean, you have two issues. One issue is the 11 to 12 million undocumented workers that are in the United States today. Those folks need a pathway to citizenship. There is no rational argument I have heard yet that isn't the correct course to take with the undocumented workers who are already in this country.
So, you know, these workers are exploited as it is, and folks, I don't want to sit here and beat up a illegal immigrant. They came here not because they wanted to. I would imagine they have families at home. They need to feed. They need to put roofs over their heads. Most of them come from Mexico. Not actually most, about 50-some percent. I kind of wonder what I would do if I was faced with that same situation where I needed to put food on the table and couldn't find a job and heard about a country where the streets were paved with gold. I think I might quickly become an illegal immigrant myself.
Understand, Bill, what has happened. The number of undocumented workers that have come into the United States has grown by a frightening amount since the passage of NAFTA. And what did NAFTA do in Mexico? It destroyed the collective farm. It destroyed the agricultural base of that country. It's a little like how we're dealing with immigration is a little like you being in a house that's on fire, and you escape from the house, and you're arrested. These folks are escaping from a destitute existence, coming to the United States for a better life, and folks want to throw them in jail. I mean, it's just flat out wrong.
Well, you know, it's wrong, and I agree. But on the other side, I see, you know, the willingness to accept, you know, what I call the cheapest of wages, and, you know, therefore taking down, you know, what I would expect to have hope to become in the American dream, you know, and that's whatever you think that may be, a car, a home, kids in college, whatever. So, somewhat I see both sides here. I don't want to beat up, you know, illegal immigrants because they're here because they have to be. But I also see, you know, the deterioration of wages in this country.
And can't agree with that. I mean, the argument that we need undocumented workers because there are jobs that Americans won't do, I don't buy. My father-in-law worked in a copper mine for 40 years, climbed a mile straight down into a hole, and worked 40 years underground. If an American will do that, they will do anything as long as it pays well and they can support their families.
Absolutely, and I think you hit the nail right on the head, as long as it pays well. I mean, when I think, you know, the way it's being spun is, well, they're going to come in and do jobs Americans don't want to do. And most people immediately think of picking fruit or vegetables. But that's not the case, is it?
No, it's not the case. I mean, you look at the in construction on the Tom Hartman show, and I hate to talk about another radio program,
we'll
but
let it go.
On the Tom Hartman show, they actually had a guest on there who talked about what has happened in the construction industry, specifically with hanging sheetrock, and how they've brought in undocumented workers who have been exploited by subcontractors and have just taken over the industry. And these folks and the workers, they don't have workers' compensation, they don't have Social Security. Who knows what they're being paid because there's no regulation over it.
Absolutely. And it's not just in the construction industry. I mean, we're talking about, I did a little research for the show, and in the RV manufacturing industry is largely illegal immigrants. In like lawn care, you know, for the neighborhoods, is largely illegal immigrants. And it seems like it's more and more and more becoming prevalent that this is where employers are turning because, A, it is cheaper labor. B, there's not a lot of, you know, repercussions from undocumented workers. They basically show up, do the job, and go home if they have a home. So, I mean, you know, I see where, you know, this trend towards undocumented workers, and I tend to agree that guest worker program is not the answer in any of this. And I mean, you know, let's get back to some of the questions I asked earlier. I know President Bush has made a statement that there must be a strong workplace enforcement with tough penalties. I'd like to see the day that this administration forces an employer to do anything. But, I mean, some of the questions out there being asked are, you know, what about minimum wage? What about, you know, labor rights? And, you know, how does all of that fit into the guest worker program?
Well, with the Bush administration trying to break the back of labor, and we're all waiting for two decisions that will be coming out of the National Labor Relations Board in July that could take tens of thousands of workers out of our ranks by redefining what supervisory employees are, we know it's a pretty safe bet that Bush isn't going to put a guest worker program subject to the National Labor Relations Act. It's not going to be a pro-labor, pro-protection of those workers program that he is going to deliver. I want to say one thing, and I think it's important. This is an American problem. This isn't just an American problem. It's also a Mexican problem. It's very interesting following the election in Mexico. The front runner for the presidency of Mexico is the ex-mayor of Mexico City, and his name escapes me at the moment. But one of the things he's running on is renegotiating NAFTA, renegotiating all trade agreements as it relates to Mexico. That's what needs to happen. Mexico must rebuild its economy. It cannot rebuild its economy under these trade agreements that we're all suffering under. And I dare say that the United States, 10 years down the road, is going to have a hard time rebuilding its economy if we have these current trade agreements. And I think what the administration is trying to do is divert our attention from what the problems are in this country.
Absolutely. Weren't the NAFTA and CAFTA and all that, weren't they supposed to raise the standard of Mexican workers? What happened with that?
Well, as soon as corporations found cheaper markets, what did they do? They moved the plants from Mexico to Asia. And that's what capitalism is in search of constantly, is cheaper and cheaper labor markets, right?
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, Mexico had a resurgence for a bit, but as soon as they could find cheaper labor markets, and now Japan, China, you know, $3-4 an hour, in some cases 50 cents an hour, even Mexico can't compete with that.
Right. I think it was the CEO of General Electric that said his ideal factory would be on a barge. And when he pushed it to one country, and as soon as their workers wanted more than whatever, 12 or 13 cents an hour, he would just undock it and move it to another country where he could get, you know, wages for 8 to 10 cents an hour.
Well, I love being on KBOO because I get to say exactly what I want to. and I hope middle America, blue-collar America, working America is waking up and understanding that we have more in common with the workers in Mexico and Venezuela or any workers in the world than we will ever have with these global corporations that are raping and pillaging our planet and raping and pillaging our people.
Absolutely. Well, you know, another thing that that NAFTA was being sold as, that it would even out the standards of the two countries. And, you know, I think we misunderstood what they were telling us. We thought maybe they were going to raise the standards standards of Mexican workers, but I think their whole idea was to lower the standards of American workers.
And we were seduced by cheap products.
Absolutely, and I don't believe that's happened. One of the other things President Bush talked about in a speech on guest worker was the fact that he would work with foreign countries to give credit to guest workers so that when they went back home, and I'm not sure exactly how that's going to work either after 6 years, how do you just up and leave? But when they went back home, they would be given credit to their country's pension system. I didn't know Mexico had a social security system. Am I wrong there?
I have no idea. I have so much distrust for the Bush administration, and I think what happened with the negotiation over the Peruvian trade agreement really illustrates what happened. Did you know that the president of Peru, for the first time, this is the first time this has happened, said, look, I will abide by the International Labor Organization, which you know is under the UN. I'll abide by those labor standards. And you know what President Bush said? No, because we'd have to raise the standards in the United States. So anything this administration is going to say that is pro-worker, I just find it very hard to believe.
Yeah. You know, Tom, and again, we're talking to Tom Chamberlain, president of the Oregon State AFL-CIO on guest worker programs. Tom, when I was doing research on this, somehow in the back of my mind, I thought I would come up with some information on the labor secretary of this country and some information on what, and I'm still thinking it's Elaine Chao. I haven't heard anything. We haven't heard anything out of that office for years, have we?
No. I mean, no, you haven't.
Huh.
What you've had are one bad decision after another from the National Labor Relations Board. You have heard from the Department of Labor in more audits of unions, just really trying to pin unions against the wall. I mean, this is the most anti-worker administration this country has seen since the Depression.
Right, and you would think an important subject like guest workers, wouldn't you think that the Labor Secretary of the United States would want to weigh in? I mean, that just makes common sense to me. But yet it's silence.
Yeah.
So, you know, in Portland about a month ago, IFCO Pallet Company, there was a raid across the United States on this particular corporation. And I don't know if you remember that or read about that at all, Tom.
Yeah, I vaguely remember it.
Yeah, you know, and what kind of irritated me was, you know, it was a photo op. I mean, that was pretty obvious because it was across the United States. But what irritated me was that they arrested undocumented workers and deported them, which is the law, okay. But all of the decision makers in the company who decided to hire these undocumented workers were just let alone. They were there, and guess probably what's happening today, right now.
Yeah.
There's more undocumented workers there.
There is, but I hope your listeners understand something. That of the 11 to 12 million, my wife's a Latina, okay? Of the 11 to 12 million undocumented workers in this country, they're intertwined with our families. You understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And to rip an undocumented worker away from their family creates it's just a hardship on everyone. It makes no sense. You can't all of a sudden start enforcing the law.
Well, I tend to agree with you 100%, although, you know, it still comes down to how do we protect our jobs when we're competing, you know. We used to have to protect our jobs from low wages in another country. Well, now we have to protect our jobs, you know, from low wages right here in our own country.
But I think you have to split the issue. One issue is the undocumented workers who are currently in this country. All right? And the Kennedy bill does that. The second issue is undocumented workers who have yet to come to this country.
Right.
And I think that's what you have to focus on.
Absolutely. It's not so much the 11 million in the country today.
That's right.
It's the next 11 million and the next 11 million. Because I got to tell you, if we have undocumented workers today doing a job for $4 an hour, and the next wave comes in, what are we going to be at, $2 an hour?
Right.
And then at a dollar an hour?
And there's always going to be immigration.
Absolutely.
There always is. And what we have to make sure is that those immigrants that come into this country are subject to all our laws, all the protections, the right to join unions, the right for minimum wage. That's what we have to ensure. If we don't do that, then they'll be exploited. They will drive down the cost of labor in this country.
Absolutely, and I think that's exactly what's happening today. And, you know, that's the problem I see with the guest worker program is that,
right.
You know, you want someone to come into this country, contribute for 6 years, and then leave. I don't see that as the answer.
No, it is not.
So, Tom, we just have about a minute left, and I do appreciate you. We're talking to Tom Chamberlain, president of the Oregon AFL-CIO on the guest worker program. And there's a number of guest worker programs out there, and I knew we would barely scratch the surface here tonight, but I think it's important that people understand certain things about this because there's certain talking points. And then that's it. And I wanted to go a little deeper than the talking points, like, you know, jobs Americans don't want. You know, who's going to determine what jobs we don't, and why don't we want these jobs? You know, those are the questions we need to be asking.
Right.
So
I think the other question is, why does this issue come up right now when the president's numbers are the lowest they've been in his presidency, the Republicans are in trouble in Congress, you know? The timing on this is just so strange.
Well, we only have to look to Monday to see what the news was from out of the White House to give you an answer there.
Okay.
They'll use any ploy they have to reach their base and try and rouse up some extra votes. So, Tom, anything to close with?
No, very interesting subject. Always glad to come on KBOO and talk to you, Bill. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I'm glad to have you on. I don't really think we scratched the surface here. It's kind of a hard topic to talk about. There's a lot of varying views. I don't really think there's a answer. I think there's a multitude of answers. But I tend to agree with you on one particular thing, that it's not so much the 11 million or 12 million workers in this country today. It's the next 11 or 12 million that we need to really be concerned about. So with that, Tom, thank you. I appreciate it. I know you're very busy, and I really appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to come in and talk to us. So thank you very much.
Okay.
And in the studio tonight, we have some, I'm going to say volunteers, I may be wrong here, from the Oregon Bus Project. We have Garrett Down and Bretta London. Welcome to Labor Radio.
Well, thank you, Bill. Pleasure to be here.
So, Garrett, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Bus Project?
Bus Project. You know, when I first heard of it, I was like, you know what? Mass transportation is a great thing. Well, that sounds neat. I'll check out the website. Then, you know, realized it was a little bit more than that. We may like mass transportation. We don't really provide it. It's a
on occasion you do.
Oh, sure. we're taking elementary school kids around just the other day.
Uh-oh, something happened.
You there?
No, I think something happened to the microphone. Uh-oh, are we on? You are on. Okay. Go ahead, Garrett.
All right, there. Can you guys hear me now?
No. I think we're having some... Oh, we are on? Okay. So you took some kids on a trip the other day, is that...
Well, when it's just sitting in a stable, it's no good, so we might as well get it out in the world as much as we can. But it's a kind of a metaphor for getting people together, actually going out and doing something. Really, the bus is about bringing people together for grassroots political change. If you can get people registering to vote, if you can... Oh, we're finally back on.
No, okay, go ahead. Just, you can take your headphones off, because they're not going to work. Sorry about the technical difficulties, folks. So the bus project is, again, and I apologize for all the technical difficulties. Let's start over. The bus project is...
Bus project is an incubator for ideas and people. If you're looking for creative ways to get people engaged in the political process, and if you're looking for interesting ways to get people actually impacting
the world as we know it through direct impact in our government and how we govern ourselves as a group, then we're trying to get people engaged in that, particularly young folks. So one of those ways would be through this PolitiCorps program that we have. And Britta here is a graduated fellow from our inaugural summer, which was last year. It's a 10-week intensive political training program. We look for the best and brightest folks across the country. Britta didn't have to come that far. She was there with Reed, there at Reed College. But
so what kind of program? What's he talking about here? What was this program?
Well, basically, 13 of us got together at the bus project and just started making things happen. We built a program called Building Votes, which didn't exist before the PolitiCorps fellows got there. But once we arrived, we went onto the street and we started recruiting volunteers for the bus project and Building Votes, which is a nonpartisan youth voter engagement program. We were talking to people on the street, and we found that the best way to get people to register to vote is to ask them face-to-face to register to vote, which makes sense. It makes sense that the best way is just to ask them, and then they'll say yes and register. And so we took that one step further by getting people to ask people to register to vote who they knew. And so what we're doing is we're looking for block captains and apartment captains on every block and apartment building in the whole city, the whole metro area, to make sure that their neighbors are registered to vote.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a big task.
Wow.
Yeah. But
so, what do you do in your spare time?
excuse me? Spare time?
I've heard of such a thing.
Exactly. So we're registering. We're creating some excitement. Is this geared mostly towards youth, or there's no age on this?
Oh, there's certainly no age limit, although youth voters are important because they don't vote as often as other voters do. They're hard to get to because they move around a lot, and that's difficult in Oregon because we have mail-in ballots. And so if they move, their address changes, and they need to re-register. Everyone needs to register every time they move.
Hmm.
And so they're harder to get to that way, and often they live in locked-down apartment buildings, which means that it's hard to find them, to talk to them, to ask them to register to vote.
So, Garrett, is this just about creating interest in voting? And getting people to register to vote?
Well, we'd like to think that's the first step.
Okay.
So getting back to why the bus project, why is it called that?
Mm-hmm.
So we've actually got a vehicle. And the way this thing all kicked off was in 2002, a group of folks got around saying, you know, this is a midterm election year. What's a way we could really directly impact the future of Oregon? And they looked at the state legislature and saw that it had been in far right-wing control for over a decade at that point. And said, you know what? We can complain and moan about this all we want, but
unless we go and do something,
let's do something. Exactly.
Yeah.
So getting back to what Britta said about the best way to convince someone to do something is by actually talking to them
and asking them.
I mean, in this era of mass media, you get inundated with messages and advertising from all different angles. So, what if you were to buy a bus? Park it in a centralized location, find a bunch of crazed loons and fill the bus and take it out to an area that's going to make a critical impact. Most of the legislative seats in Oregon are very, very solidly in control of one camp or another.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not a partisan organization. We work for candidates who, for instance, work for workers' rights and other issue-based things. We call them our 6 E's.
Okay, let's talk about that. So you do have criteria, and if a candidate meets that criteria, then you endorse that candidate or you support that candidate. You knock on doors for that candidate. What do you do for that candidate?
Well, I should be very clear. We're talking about the bus pack here. Is the subset of the bus project world that does this direct candidate work, and they don't do direct endorsements. No, they don't really add their name to a list. They say, you know what? If we like this person, we're going to go out and actually help get them elected.
Okay.
So you take that bus, fill it with people, and then work with a local group of organized volunteers who also want to go out and knock on doors.
So you said, let's get back to the criteria.
Sure.
You said something about workers' rights.
Well, we've got these things, the six E's that I mentioned
there.
Okay. I'm not a policy wonk at all. I couldn't tell you much about any particular issue if you grilled me for several minutes on it. But if you're talking about education, environment, equal rights, election reform, economic justice, workers' rights, for instance, mm-hmm. and we had to cheat to get to 6E. So healthcare, we dropped the H off that. But
yeah, I like it.
absolutely. Well, so we're looking for critical races. The bus pack is are going to be won or lost by a handful of votes. One of the candidates the bus pack worked for was won by 40 votes, and that was fewer doors than a single volunteer knocked on in a single day.
Wow.
And our goal is to turn out hundreds of folks.
So Bretta, give me a typical, okay, it's Saturday morning, the sun's out, it's shining, I drive down, I hook up to the bus, and I climb on the bus, and then what happens?
Oh, then the party begins. you get on the bus, and we drive to the district, whether that district is in Multnomah or Lane County or down in Ashland. It could be a heck of a drive. But when you get there, there's generally a lot of free food involved, and there's generally a lot of inspirational speeches given.
In the bus on the way down?
In the bus on the way down. Once you get there, all over the place, there's music, and there's food, and there's balloons, and then you get out there and you hit the street, and that's where the real work happens.
Okay, so let's see. I want to go on this bus, but I'm really not too good at knocking on doors and talking to people, and so I'm thinking maybe I'm not going on the bus. How do you convince me to get on that bus and do something?
Well, because this is the one thing that works. You can try sitting at home and making phone calls if you want, mm-hmm. or you can try just talking to your friends, but that's not going to be nearly as effective as getting out there and talking to the people who are actually voting on these matters and whose minds you can change. You may not think you can, but you definitely can.
There's also a need for community out there. If you're talking about, you know, people growing insular and not really, you know, bowling alone with their friends rather than bowling together in a bowling league. I mean, the labor movement recognizes that we're stronger together than we are apart. I mean, it's the same for workers, and it's mm-hmm. the same for political activism. So if you're addressing a need for folks to actually meet other folks of common interests and work towards a common goal together, and one that's much more likely to be met if all of those folks are on the same page.
So is there some training involved in this? So I don't have to just, like, get on the bus and go down and knock on doors?
My first bus trip, when I first started volunteering in 2004, I was scared out of my mind when I realized they actually wanted me to talk to strangers.
And something you may not really know about, right?
every time the bus pack goes out, there's a service project as well. Our motto is to leave things better than we found them. So we'll do that in terms of political effectiveness, but we'll also do that in terms of, you know, for folks who can't or would prefer not to walk. So I cleaned up a park my first time out. The next time around...
So if you get on the bus, you don't have to go knock on doors. There's other jobs that you can do. And
we got a snack mobile that needs driving to make sure the volunteers have drink and sustenance if they get tired. And so
and
there's
people to help serve that, and people to clean that up, and people
exactly.
to set that up. And
I mean, there's a lot of doing to be done.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The second time I went out, Britta mentioned there's a really good training. It's, you know, quick, easy, 10-point thing. It's mm-hmm. not, we don't pretend to be experts on the doorstep. We're working with local volunteers and with a campaign that knows the answers to those questions. But me or other volunteers on the bus trip, you know, if we're asked a hard question at the door, we're going to refer those to the campaign. But basically, one of the things we want to do is just find out what's on folks' minds. Most of the candidates we work with are very interested to hear what their constituents or potential constituents would like them to take to Salem in terms of their concerns.
So you're not knocking on a door and saying, vote for Joe?
We would say that, you know, I met Joe this morning, and we had a big rally, and, you know, I'm really impressed with some of the ideas he has, and I care very much, for instance, about the rising cost of health care.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that Joe does, too. And so that's why I'm out here giving up my Saturday or my Sunday.
Oh, that's good.
And, you know, you just get to talking with folks, and it it ends up being quite persuasive.
Yeah, it's like anything else. I think once you go and do it a couple of times, it becomes kind of easier and easier, sure. And then you figure, hey, I kind of like this, you know.
Oh, it's really fun, actually. Yeah. It may sound twisted, but, you talk about the need for community. If you're getting out and actually meeting strangers, that's relatively unheard of. You don't really, wave and say hello to the person you're passing in the supermarket aisle. But if you're given an excuse to chat with them, usually they're a pretty nice guy or gal. Mm-hmm.
So Bretta, like what kind of projects have you worked on in the past and how do you know you've made a difference? I mean, what's the impact, the word coming back that, yes, it was because of the bus project that this happened or that happened?
Well, like I said, I was working all summer at the bus project last year, and I've come back to work again this summer, and in my absence, I've noticed that we now have 225 block captains who are trained and walking their blocks and making sure their neighbors are registered to vote. That's pretty significant. That's 225 blocks or apartment buildings that are covered. We don't have to worry about them anymore. And I just want to say that it's not going to stop there. I mean, we're at the beginning of the summer right now, and there's 24 weeks until the election, and we're going to register 15,000 people to vote, and we're going to have 1,500 block captains out there walking their blocks and talking to their neighbors.
And we could use some new ones, is my understanding.
We certainly could. Yeah, that's actually one thing I want to make sure all the listeners right now are thinking about. Is that, number one, they should make sure that they're registered to vote at their current address. If they've moved recently, if they didn't get their ballot for the primary in May, they should make sure they're registered. And they can do that by going to buildingvotes.org/register, and you can download a form right there from the web.
Okay, so, and again, folks, we're talking to Garrett Downen and Bretta London. They're from the Oregon Bus Project. Is it the Oregon Bus Project or just the Bus Project?
Well, it's the Oregon Bus Project. We are proud of our state, and it's a statewide thing. We often shorten it to just call it the Bus Project.
Okay. And so is this project going on in other states, or is this like a brainchild here in Oregon, or what's...
We're, again, proud. This is one of those homegrown traditions like the bottle bill and a little bit newer than that. But we've actually received quite a bit of national interest. Folks see that this model is actually working. If you're talking about the bus pack side of things, these candidates we supported, I mean, one of the interesting numbers is that of the 10 state Senate candidates we supported, and along with, myriad of other groups that were doing good things by supporting these forward-thinking candidates, of those 10, 9 won. We like to think we were
somewhat responsible.
So, we helped. I mean, the margins on these are so close.
I was just going to say, in a lot of races, you're looking at 48 and 52%.
Oh, yeah.
So, if you swing that by 4 or 5%, and I think a lot of people appreciate someone taking some time off and coming up and knocking on their door and say, hey, what do you really think about health care? Or what's the most important issue you see in the state facing us today?
Well, sure.
And I just talked to Joe today, and here's what he said to me about it,
Well, they actually did some studies on those numbers. It's interesting you mentioned those, because there's these guys at Yale, Green and Gerber. They were looking at various methods of contacting voters and encouraging them to get involved. And the most effective way was by knocking on their door and saying hello.
Exactly.
One-on-one. It increased voter turnout. They were looking at that metric by 7 to 12%. And as in those races, that's huge. For instance, Kate Brown, the president of the majority party in the Senate, she won by 7 votes her first election. That's
7
votes. Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty good. I know in the last election cycle, I know we just had Tom Chamberlain on, but when Tim Nesbitt was the president of the Oregon AFL-CIO, he did a lot of Get Out the Vote, GOTV.
Mm-hmm.
And the numbers I heard, and I'm just going to kind of round them off, but it was almost like 90% of union households voted, and which turned into like 24% of the population, even though union household density is probably down around, 12, 11%, somewhere in that area. So that one-on-one, reminding people to vote, finding out what people's issues are, I think is extremely important, and that's why I had you come on, because I know we're gearing up for 2006.
We're in the heat of it at the moment, actually.
And what I'm thinking is, I don't know, I heard somewhere that 2006 is kind of an important election. I mean, is that?
Well, that's the rumor. Yeah. I mean, if you're looking at a national level, of course, and if and on the local level in many, many areas around the country, and in Oregon.
Well, it starts locally.
It starts locally. That's the thing. I mean, that's why I care very much about national issues myself. And the reason I decided to put my time into the bus project and these statewide things is, you know, you really feel like you can make an impact. And when you. Because you are.
And especially when you see some success stories and 250 block captains, I mean, that's got to be, like, unheard of.
Absolutely.
So if somebody wants to be, why don't you tell us what a block captain is and how someone gets to do this?
A block captain is simply someone who takes a couple hours a year to make sure that their neighbors on their block or apartment building are registered to vote, and then goes around before the election and reminds them to vote. It's a really simple job, actually, which is partly why we think we can get so many of them. If you want to become a block captain, all you have to do is go to the website, buildingvotes.org, and sign up, and there's a sign-up sheet right there. We'll get you to a training and get you some voter registration cards and kind of let you know what you're doing, and then you're off, and you're helping being part of the movement.
And then you get to ride on the bus, too, if you want to?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I've seen the bus. It's kind of a pretty big bus. It's a cool bus, and it has air conditioning, what I understand.
it's actually in the refrigeration shop as we speak at the moment, making sure it's in tip-top, you know, chilly condition. Yeah. We've got some upcoming trips, and I'd love to invite your listeners.
Yeah, go on. I see you had, you know, a lot of trips. That's the one thing. By the way, I got to ask you, who does your emails? I mean, who does your webpage? You know, because when I get some of these and I open them up, it's like the last one was when the naked guy comes knocking on my door. You know what I mean? Whether you want to or not, you got to open the thing up.
We actually have a room full of typewriters and monkeys. And, you know, if they want to volunteer, we'll let them volunteer. That's...
Okay, because somebody's definitely got a sense of humor. I have never not been intrigued by one of the subject matters coming in on your emails.
Yes. Well, check out busproject.org. You can get signed up for that newsletter there. It's just enter your address there.
And be careful, because what I did, I thought I was clicking on an email to respond, and I clicked on the unsubscribe.
Oh, no.
And I didn't know it, and then all of a sudden, like, not getting anything, and I'm like, well,
tragic.
What's going on here, you know? And
you hurt so many monkeys' feelings just now.
I know. I went back, and I took care of it.
Good.
And we're back up and running, and everything's copacetic there now. So tell us, what are some of the upcoming events?
We have, on the bus pack side, if you want to make sure you can help turn the state around and make sure we have a forward-thinking, progressive legislature. June 24th is the next one. And this is a special day because it is the date of Drive, which is our big fundraiser. And this isn't, you know, we don't really bring out the white tablecloths. Instead, we fill a warehouse with 1,500 people and have a warehouse party. They're going to think jugglers, think aerialists, think the bus.
Fun.
Exactly. So that's going to be happening the evening of June 24th, right after the License to Drive bus trip. If you go on this thing, it's...
I get to drive the bus?
Well...
I got a CDL.
We need to talk after the broadcast here. Excellent. We'll get you on the insurance and make that happen.
Okay.
But... No, we're meeting at Grant High School at 8:30 a.m. on June 24th. If you go to busproject.org, you can find out all the details about that. You asked about the name of it. I mean, one of the ways we get people on these things is by making them fun. And for instance, the theme for our July 15th and 16th trip is the Polar Bear Express to the Coast. So one of the candidates who we're working with is...
Nope.
No, I'm
out. Yeah, that water's too cold for me.
Well, you can at least chuckle at those of us who are silly enough to try it. But one of them, July 8th is another trip. It's a family wage jobs themed trip. But we don't have a good name for it yet. So if you or any of your listeners have any brilliant ideas. Like, this is a community thing. We're always looking for folks who have a creative idea. So if you have a know of a good name for a family wage trip, bus trip, and ways to we could theme that with speakers or anything, send an email to bus@busproject.org.
And this isn't just geared towards a particular age. I mean, anyone is welcome on this. And just talk a little bit about that, because I know every time I get somebody here to talk about it or I'm involved in it or anything about it, it's like you're probably like half my age, you know, and I'm always thinking, well, okay, but it's not just geared towards young people. I mean, this is across the board.
I mean, like Britta was saying, that's an area of particular need.
Right.
You know, if you've got youth voting has gone downhill since the 18-year-olds received the right to vote in the early 70s, with a couple exceptions like 2004, for instance. But it's for young people of all ages, the young at heart.
The young at heart. Good. I'm into that. So you have all these events planned. Now, you just did something on Sunday, wasn't it? Was there something going on?
We did. Well,
I was really interested in that. I thought that was pretty cool. Go ahead and talk about Sunday's event.
Double Redemption Sunday. Now, you've got these people think of the progressive movement as completely disassociated from, you know, religion. From there's faith-based politics. If you say that, you think far right wing these days, which, you know, that's not necessarily the case. If you're talking about healing the sick,
you're telling me that there's progressives that believe in God.
Believe it or not.
Does George know this?
Yeah, he's.
Does he know you're doing this?
Exactly. We considered doing a write-in, a letter writing campaign on Sunday, but figured that actually partnering, you know, community-based progressives and faith-based progressives of all faiths or lack thereof. You know, we're all working for common interests. If you're talking about stewardship of the land, be it in your mind a secular thing or God's green earth, then you want to be working towards putting candidates in office who are going to help protect that resource.
Yeah, and it seems like generally, if candidates, I mean, I know it's, I don't want to stereotype and I don't want to go across the board, but if you care about healthcare, if you care about the six E's,
sure,
then pretty much that's included. And it's you know, if you're from the far right, you've got one dominating idea, I guess, in your mind is some corporation somewhere and how to make them more profits. And then and you know, I think they did a real good job in the last couple elections on selling people on particular ideas and having them vote against their own best interests. And that's the particular part I really like about this is the camaraderie and people getting together and figuring out that, hey, wait a minute, we're kind of all in this together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether you don't have health care and I don't have a good job, or, you know, you care about the environment, or, he goes to church on Sunday, you know, we're kind of all in this together.
Well, it takes a little bit of selflessness and insanity if you want to be working for the public interest, because it's not really worth me spending a whole bunch of my time or my money for imperceptibly cleaner air. But if it is in a myriad of corporations' interests, for instance, to invest $1 million into weakening regulations that are going to allow them to pollute the air more and make $1,001,001 in profit.
Right. So Britta, tell us again, how do you get involved? How do you contact? What do you want people to do?
Well, if you want to go on a bus trip, the first thing you got to do is go to busproject.org, and they can hook you up right there on the site.
Click on bus trips on that main page.
Yeah. And the second thing, if you want to be a block captain and walk your block, you go to buildingvotes.org. And if you haven't registered to vote at your current address, that's the first thing you should do, and that's buildingvotes.org/register.
So how is this, and we have just a few minutes left here, how is this received? Because I envision, and again, I don't want to stereotype, and I don't want, you know, this whole group of 19 and 20-year-olds calling me on the phone and beating me up. But how does youth receive the bus project when you go out and say, hey, look, you need to vote, and here's why, and here's how you can get involved, and how do they usually receive that message?
I mean, it really depends. There's a lot of apathy out there, mm-hmm. and so
they don't see how it connects to their everyday life.
Exactly. So they think of government as a thing that's completely disassociated from how they live their lives, when in fact it's just the bunch of us working together to try to make it all work for all of us. If I could bungle that sentence even more. But no, we try to creatively package these things. So if you're going to have a candidate debate, for instance, instead of, you know, sitting a bunch of besuited individuals at the top of an austere white-walled room, why not throw it in the Roseland downtown, call it Candidates Gone Wild, and address one in a monkey suit and have musical interludes where they're playing the harmonica?
Why not?
Exactly. Well, it actually has been working pretty well. We had a thousand people there each of the last few times we've done that.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. I think I got a project for – I'll come drive your bus, but I got a project I think you need to work on for me. So we definitely will talk after this. So, Bretta and Garrett, we got just a few minutes or a few seconds left. You want to each close with something?
Absolutely. I think the most important thing to remember is that no matter what you believe in, no matter which of the six E's is your favorite E, you should keep in mind that it's not going to work unless you're willing to volunteer and get out there and actually work for it. Democracy isn't a spectator sport. You got to get involved.
Absolutely. And Garrett, what are the six E's again?
Education, environment, equal rights, election reform, economic justice, and our favorite one, health care. Not necessarily by issue, but it's funnier.
Okay.
Dropping the eight.
So, Garrett, anything to close with?
You know, I would just want to point out that there's no big, massive staff running this thing. I started out as a volunteer, and they haven't been able to get rid of me, so I'm getting some breadcrumbs at the end of the day now. But this is a community-driven effort, much like KBOO here, which is why I'm so honored to be here. It only gets as much accomplished as people put into it.
Right.
So.
Right.
Please get engaged, volunteer, put some feet on the street, and check it out at busproject.org.
Yeah, folks, and I got to tell you, this project has been around for a while, and I see great things coming out of this. And I want to thank both of you right now for your efforts that you do this. And I think just attracting youth to get involved in politics is just phenomenal, and I want to thank you very much.
It's an honor to be on. Thank you so much for having us. Okay.
And right now, Ben, you want to do the underwriting, and then we'll go to Don.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from SEIU Local 503, OPEU, whose mission is to improve the quality of life through worker empowerment and a progressive labor movement, and whose members deliver quality public services to Oregonians every day, and also by Iron Workers Shopman's Local 516 and the Pacific Northwest Iron Workers District Council, proudly fighting to preserve living wage jobs and resisting their outsourcing. Information at 503-257-7443.
Okay, and on the phone we have Don, one of our other hosts. Don, how you doing?
Good, how are you, Beth?
I'm just fine. So tell you have an announcement to make, is that...
Well, yeah, just as something that, I don't know, listeners may remember a few years back, in fact, 4 years ago, there was a group of 300-plus custodians of Portland Public Schools who were terminated, not because anything they did wrong, of course, but because the district wanted to save some money by contracting out and paying people as little as half in some cases. Well, those folks filed a lawsuit, which, you know, people who pay close attention may remember last December, finally made its way to the Oregon Supreme Court, which ruled the thing was illegal because it violated a little-known law, a 1937 law, that said that there's a custodian civil service board, which is responsible for hiring and firing and so forth. This was meant to eliminate corruption at the time. And I think part of the corruption was seen as, you know, the idea you had money going out to private contractors wasn't necessarily good for keeping public officials honest. So it's just curious that, you know, 60 years later, this law ends up overturning a decision to contract out these guys' jobs. Now, what's interesting now is that they've let this board go completely dormant, and they have to find three candidates in the next few months to serve on this custodian civil service board. Basically, they're asking for people who have some civic spirit, who aren't employees of the district but live in Portland, to serve on this board really without pay or gratitude for 2 to 6 years, And I just think that it's something that our listeners might be interested in.
And first you can contact us at laborradio@AOL.com. Any other contacts?
Yeah, certainly. Actually, if you visit the pps.k12.or.us, it's the Portland Public Schools website. In the news section there, they have an application you can download and so forth. The deadline is actually next Tuesday, not tomorrow, but 1 week after. And again, I think mainly what the union in this case is just overjoyed to be coming back to work, although they're not sure what kind of conditions they're going to have, and they have to bargain that. But they really want someone who's, you know, at least minimally sympathetic to serve on this custodian civil service board. I think if there's any cable listeners who have a little bit of civic spirit, a rare thing these days, I think it'd be great if they wanted to take a look at that.
Okay, Don, well, thanks for calling in. And again, you can contact us at laborradio@AOL.com for that information. And in the studio, we have two guests who I think maybe got in a traffic jam or something and couldn't get here quite on time. say your names.
I'm Celia Scalderon.
My name's Ida.
Ida. We were going to talk about Providence Health System, and unfortunately we're not going to get to do that very long. But let's talk real quick about the Workers' Rights Board last week and why you're trying to get...
Union formed?
No, not the union, but you're trying to get ground rules for the election.
Yes, we are. Sorry. We had a meeting last week with the Secretary of State, Bill Bradbury, and it was quite a nice turnout. There, you know, we packed the house, and a lot of people came and attended that. Several Providence workers from out of state, they came from California, and we had people from New York and different places like that trying to help support us Providence employees to do
so
that.
So why did you have to go to a workers' rights board to get ground rules for an election?
Because we tried in the past in 99, and we weren't successful with that. And different things that had happened, it didn't allow us to do that.
What you're trying to tell me is your employer's not, like, really ready to accept the fact that you want union representation.
Exactly.
So they're not like, giving you a hard time or anything, are they?
They're not playing fair right now.
Okay.
We need to set some fair ground rules so we can do this.
And that's why you went to the Workers' Rights Board, and Secretary of State Bill Bradbury hosted the panel. And,
yes, he did.
And I really wanted to talk about this, folks, because it was just an excellent victory for working people. It really set the tone, not just for this struggle and this union organizing, but for a lot of different struggles going on and upcoming ones in this state. And so unfortunately, we only just have a few seconds, so... Oh, really? Oh, excellent. Excellent. So tell us a little bit more. Ida, tell us, what came out of this workers' rights board? I mean, what was the overall sentiment?
Well, the commission's decided to back the Providence workers and agree that they need a right to fair elections. And right now they need to convene with each other, and we're waiting on that report.
Right, and what this workers' rights board does is kind of puts it on public record that, hey, rather than just go into this NLRB election and it's kind of private, no really knows that it's going to happen, this kind of puts it up in the face of the public, and now we're on record that this had better be on the up and up.
Exactly. Okay. Workers should have a right to a fair election, right? They should have a right to the information.
Absolutely. So how did Providence receive the news?
I truly don't know that, but okay. I do know that they were invited to come.
And did they?
No.
Wonder why.
I do too.
Probably they were a little embarrassed, I would think. I mean, if you know, here's your and if I'm remembering correctly, this struggle is not, you know, usually typically in a union struggle, you're talking about wages and benefits and all this thing. But what you wanted was a little bit of a voice on the job in health care, mm-hmm. in how you take care of your patients.
Exactly.
Is that?
Providing good patient care and, you know, safety for the patients.
Right. And wouldn't you think that this was a common goal of Providence? I mean, maybe I'm a little confused here.
I mean, that's what they say.
Until it comes down to maybe an extra 15 cents here or a dime there, because it all has to be about for profit, correct? I mean, if we, and I guess the question now comes in, how much is enough? Oh, well, it's not that. Could be a little bit more, but not certainly not that. We need more, you know. So, again, I wish really would have had a lot more time so we could do a little better explanation about this. But the healthcare workers there decided that they needed to form a union so that they could have management respect their ideas and their suggestions.
Exactly.
And the company decided that it really didn't want to just kind of do that on their own.
Yes.
So, and this is how long ago?
Well, if you want to go back to 99 when we tried.
Yeah. Yeah, so since 1999 in the struggle. And therefore, that's why we decided that you needed a visit to the Workers' Rights Board so that when you do get to that election, there will be rules and regulations. What type of rules and regulations are you looking for? I mean, to me, it just seems like, gee, I thought all NLRB elections were fair.
Well, I would like to say they were fair. What we were hoping for is just all of us to get together and talk about, you know, to make some fair ground rules, which we've already tried that. We've already tried to set some and send them over, but we never got any response to that before.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, you know, I'm not sure which country you think you're in, but if you're looking for a fair election in this country, you might have a problem here, you know. So anyway, the Worker Rights Board is sponsored by Jaws with Justice in Portland. And what they do, folks, is the panel is labor pillars in the community, I guess you could say, who come in and sit on this panel. You present your side, and then they make a decision. Is that pretty much where we are?
Yes.
Yeah, that's correct.
And how did that go? I mean, exactly what it... Oh, okay, folks, I got to tell you, we have a hot news flash here. Kevin Berry is stuck in traffic, and he may be 10 to 15 more minutes before he arrives. So, Kevin, we're going to take care of your time. No, I'm not going to push any CDs here. We're going to continue to talk to these Providence workers. So guess what? This all worked out pretty good. So, again, now that I know we have some time, Ida, how do we get to the decision to go to this Workers' Rights Board?
Well, first, let's be clear. I'm not a Providence worker.
Right.
Bill Bradbury heard about what was going on at Providence with the workers trying to organize and that there's not a fair process. And what Bill Bradbury does is oversees that process, right? A fair and democratic election is what he oversees.
In the state.
Yeah, in the state of Oregon. And that's what he oversees. And he wants to make sure they have that process.
Okay. So he chaired this panel.
Yes, he did.
And what was supposed to happen was the workers or Providence healthcare workers come in and put on their piece. The Providence should have come in and put on their piece, and then a decision is made, right?
That's correct. Yeah, the workers gave testimony. Bill Bradbury personally invited Russ Danielson to come, and he denied coming. He didn't want to go.
Why do you think that is again? I'm going to ask that question again because I think we all know. We just really don't want to say it.
You're right. I feel he didn't want to be put there on the spot to.
Right. Because all you're asking for is fairness.
Exactly.
And I mean, you know, that is the law in this land today. When enough workers decide to join a union, they get to join a union and the company has to sit down and bargain that first contract. Well, that's the way it's supposed to be, but
that's right.
Unfortunately, that's not quite the way it is. So what type of testimony did we use? I mean, what types of things did we hear? What were workers talking about?
There was several workers. There was actually a housekeeper who has worked at Providence for, I believe it was like 9 years. And so she was there when we tried to form in 99. And she told a story of the manager of the housekeeping department at that time, who spoke Russian, actually told them to vote against the union. And, you know, she had a good testimony. She really did. But there were several people there who, you know, they stood up and spoke and told their story.
So they were kind of stacking the votes is what you're getting at.
Yes.
Because then some of these, they're intimidated. Is that?
Yes.
So if somebody comes up to you in your language and tells you, oh, no, we don't want to vote for this and we don't want to do this, that's pretty much what...
That it's bad.
Exactly. So what type of ground rules did we end up with? Did we end up with ground rules?
No, we need to set the ground rules.
Okay. So what came out of the hearing then?
What came out of the hearing is that the Bill Bradbury and the commission decided that they agreed these workers need to have a fair election. They need to have a right to the information, right? So they need to have a fair process.
Okay, so now we have to go define that process.
Right.
And how are we going to define that process, and is this something that the company has to agree to?
I don't know if it's something that they have to agree to or not, but basically what was on the paper is that they were asking them to come together to set these ground rules, and I don't know where it's going to go from here. I just know that ground rules need to be set.
Okay. So, and I mean, when we're talking about ground rules, and we're kind of using that buzzword, we're talking about an election that's not intimidated by management.
Correct.
And I mean, I know they use all kind of tactics, like captive audience meetings, and, you know, they'll even use deportation threats to workers. And
well, the simple right to be able to even talk about forming their union in the hospital outside of patient care areas.
They're not allowed to do that in, like, lunchrooms and in parking lots and...
Well, I tell you, here's a good example. I took stuff from this meeting last week, and I put it all over. And every place that I put it, it's gone. My clipboard had a bunch of them on my clipboard, and at the end of shift, it was gone.
You know, to me, this is a true testimony, folks, of why workers need unions, because companies fight them so heartily. You know, there's obviously something in here, and again, you're not looking so much for wages and benefits and vacation time and all that. You want a voice on the job.
Voice on the job, good patient care, you know. Every patient deserves that. That's what they're paying for. You know, and people in the community, I believe taxpayers help pay that, too, for them to get good care.
Absolutely, and I mean, I know as part of my health insurance, when I go in, that's exactly what I want. I don't want a staff that's overburdened or overworked
or intimidated. Like there's a housekeeper on our floor, and she's worked there for several years. And one of the gentlemen from the union had called to ask me a couple questions and to let me know about this meeting with Bill Bradbury. But he had asked me, you know, do you think any of the housekeepers are intimidated or anything like that on your floor? And I said, no, I don't think so. And he said, well, why don't you go and ask her? And so I did, and she said yes. You know, she does feel intimidated.
Absolutely. And, folks, in case you're just joining us, Kevin Berry is stuck in traffic. He should be here momentarily, so we decided to carry on with Labor Radio. I know this is not what you're usually expecting to hear at this particular time, and for those of you wanting to listen to some soul, I apologize. However, it did give us an opportunity to bring these two together on this program and talk about Providence and their refusal to, I don't know, be a good corporate employer or citizen. You know, I mean, as a member of the community, I feel like they're not being a good corporate citizen. I mean, I know I'm, you know, pro-union and that's my focus in life, but, you know, again, we're not talking about wages and benefits and all that. We're talking about the ability to go in and make a suggestion and have that suggestion taken seriously. How do we improve health care for worker? I mean, treatment for the patients. And I just can't see why this is not a common goal. Why is it not a common goal? Am I missing something here? What are they afraid of?
I don't know, but it seems to be a struggle.
It's a real struggle. There's a buddy of mine, and I've worked with her at Providence. I mean, I know she's been there longer than me, but the floor that she works on, they actually got rid of all the CNAs on that floor except for her. And she doesn't come in until 11 o'clock in the day. So, you know, you got all the morning hour that they don't have no CNA on the floor, and we're like down in the front line, you know. We're an important part, important piece to the hospital. And, I mean, the first day that it actually went into effect, we have what's called a resource CNA, who she comes and sees throughout the house. If any CNAs are behind on tasks, she can help fill in. And so she comes to...
She must be pretty busy nowadays.
She's very busy. So she comes down to see if there's anything she can do for us on our floor, and she stops me and says, well, hold on, I'm getting paged. And it was the other floor who had just got rid of their aides to ask if she could come and help them. You know, and so these poor patients up here aren't getting good care, and I don't understand what happened there, but...
Well, it's just like if we're making widgets or taking care of patients, I guess... It comes down to 6 cents here and 12 cents there and $1.42 over here. Mm-hmm. And it's all about bottom line. And folks, we have good news. Kevin's in the studio. He's heading right now for the air room. We'll give him a few minutes to get set up and get a drink of water and to catch his breath. And then we'll get on and so we can rock out on his program. I guess we're just going to have a few seconds here. How did you feel about the workers' rights hearing? And what did the workers back at the hospital, what was their reaction to the, what I consider a victory?
A lot of them are really excited. They're thinking that this is, you know, we've come a lot further this time than we did in 99.
Amen, sister.
And
amen.
I think it just really showed us that, you know, by sticking together, that's, you know, something good can come out of it.
You know, and again, I want to go back to the fact that if this was easy, mm-hmm. everybody would belong in a union.
Exactly.
Okay? And it's not easy.
It's not easy.
And there's a reason it's not easy,
mm-hmm.
because they are so afraid of the union and the fact that now you're an equal partner in some decisions being made in that hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part they
and
don't
why
want.
Shouldn't we be a part of it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, anything to close with? Where can they get a hold of some of this information? Because you brought a lot of information here.
Yeah, they can get a hold of that at makehealthcarework.org.
Makehealthcarework.org.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll tell you a lot about the struggle that's going on.
Yeah.
And I understand there's some stuff that's going to happen, although we don't particularly want to talk about it right now. But I do want to talk about it when it's over, because I like fun and creative things.
Okay.
I think it's good. So, Kevin, you ready to go out there? Okay, well, folks, if you were listening to Labor Radio, it's glad that we got to spend some time and stay over. And for those of you wanting to hear Kevin Berry, I apologize. I did the best I could. And with that, well, thank you and good night.
The KBOO Community Calendar for Monday, June 5th. Today, Greg Palast, America's most censored journalist, will discuss his latest book, Armed Madhouse, Dispatches from the Front Lines of the Class War, including the secrets of the secret war for oil in Iraq, how the last election was stolen and how the next one will be, pushing Todd Freeman off his flat earth, the truth about globalization, the war on terror as a profit center, and also class war. The talk is a benefit for the Portland Alliance, Portland's progressive newspaper for 25 years. There's a suggested sliding scale donation of $8 to $15. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. and the event starts at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Universalist Church, 1011 Southwest 12th Avenue in Portland. For more information, you can call 503-239-4991 or see www.theportlandalliance.org. So what do you love about Portland and what would you change? Today, Hands on Portland is partnering with Mayor Tom Potter and the Vision PDX Project by bringing Portlanders together to set a course for the city's future. They invite you to join facilitated discussions, share your responses to pointed questions, and be a part of the solution. This event is from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Portland State University Smith Center, room 323. If you would like to attend, please contact Mindy Coolidge at 503-413-8902 or by emailing Mindy, M-I-N-D-Y, at handsonportland.org. Continuing with an anti-imperialist movie night and community forum, Tonight there will be a presentation of the film Loose Change, a compelling documentary which unravels the questions and lies that surround the events of September 11th, 2001. There will be a discussion group after the video where they will talk about the government and how to deal with awakening to lies and deceptions. Donations will be accepted, but nobody will be turned away for lack of funds. This event is at the Bread and Roses Center at 819 North Killingsworth in Portland. For more information, call 503-240-4462. This evening, you can catch another installment of the Emin Goldman, Leon Trotsky Progressive Spring Film Fest at PSU. The series is presented by the Progressive Student Union and a coalition of campus groups and academic departments at Portland State. Tonight, they will be playing Rabbit Proof Fence. Discussion will follow the film, and the event will go from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Multicultural Center in Portland State University at 1825 Southwest Broadway, downtown Portland. Also tonight, there will be a water engine workshop at 6 p.m. Hear from someone who has altered their vehicle and will be giving a demonstration on this topic. The event is at Andy's Auto Supply and Repair at 2150 Southeast Powell in Portland. For more information, call 503-232-0868. You have been listening to the KBOO Community Calendar for Monday, June 5th, 2006. This is KBOO Portland.